This is Nate Brussel. This is the second half hour of a one-hour broadcast. Second half of broadcast number 788. If you tuned in the beginning of the other half of the broadcast or any other time when you don't get the whole broadcast, you can write to me, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll tell you how to obtain the tapes of the broadcast in case you missed part of it. Now on to Frank Carlucci. I'm referring now to a long article in the Wall Street Journal, January the 9th, 1987, titled New National Security Chief's Ties to Men Cited in the Iran Crisis. Illegal arms deals may cloud the investigation. Now, I have a habit of reading an article through before I see who wrote it to see if I can pick up the temper or the mind of the person writing it in the way it's written, and I got down about two paragraphs and had to look, and it was Jonathan Quitney. He's one of the best investigators for the Wall Street Journal. He's written endless articles on, or quite a few extensive, on the Nugenhand Bank. He's written a book called Endless Enemies, which is a very good book, like Penny Lanoue's In Banks We Trust. If you don't have these books, write to me again, self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll tell you where to obtain them. Jonathan Quitney wrote Frank Charles Carlucci III, who is President Reagan's national security advisor, has ordered wholesale staff changes, and friends have enjoyed, who have long enjoyed his loyalty, predict he'll cleanse the NSC in the wake of the Iran-Contra arms scandal. But there is a shadow on Mr. Carlucci's prospects, his house-clinging prospects. It is whether old loyalties he's shown to a member of a circle that seems deeply involved in the shadowy world of overseas arms sales and secret dealings will be exposed in terms of the Iran-Contra scandal. These involve the former associates of Edwin Wilson, the former U.S. intelligence operative who made millions of dollars illegally by selling U.S. arms to Muammar Gaddafi. And Mr. Carlucci has a close working business relationship with two people who were very much tied up to Edwin Wilson's operations. These men, he acknowledged, had been close to Mr. Wilson, and he had invested great faith in these two men. They were never formally charged with a plot to steal taxpayers' money on arms shipments to Egypt, but there were millions of dollars, and the taxpayer should have objected. Jonathan Quitney and others wrote about it at the time. I talked about it on the air years ago, but the shipments went on, and these men made a lot of money. 3 years ago, the Justice Department declined to prosecute the two men, Major General Richard Secord and Eric von Marbod. Now, von Marbod is important. I don't know his relationship to the notorious Fritz Kramer, the background of the man, but we know that Secord comes out of TCI, which was the Otto von Bolschwing Helena von Dahm network. Mr. Hakim, formerly of Iran, American citizen, and Secord come right out of the von Bolschwing, the Reinhardt Galen operation out here in Silicon Valley. So Secord and von Marbod are very closely linked to Carlucci. The article goes on, by various accounts, both were occasional visitors in Mr. Wilson's $4 million Virginia estate. He was making $32,000 a year as a civil servant. He had just finished his stint in Navy intelligence. He also worked in Navy intelligence under Henry Kissinger and George Bush with Task Force 157. Mr. Carlucci confirmed that as the Deputy Defense Secretary in 1982, he overrode the Pentagon General Counsel and personally rescued General Secord's career when the general was suspended because of a grand jury investigation into his dealings. With Mr. Wilson, Secord wasn't indicted. He later resigned his senior Pentagon post, and now he's the kingpin, Secord, of arming the illegal arms to Nicaragua, to the Contras, and also arming illegally the weapons sent to Iran. Some current and former law enforcement officials who were active in the Egyptian arms investigation are furious over Carlucci's reinstatement of Secord in 1982. Now Secord has become a focal point of the current scandal. Now, in addition to Bernard Festerwald, representing the group that want to open up the Hashemi, Israeli Mossad, Khashoggi connections at another angle, when you get people in the Justice Department, Defense Department furious at Secord getting off the hook and with his friend von Marbod and Carlucci hiring them, and they're involved in the Iran-Contra scandal, and he's heavily involved with these people, He's supposed to clean out the NSC, and it was the NSC who hired his very friends, Secord, and worked with North and Singlaub, and the NSC worked with the buddies that he has been business-wise associated with and also protected from prosecution. And Mr. Edwin Wilson's in jail, and I'm sure he doesn't appreciate that either. This article continues, it was Mr. Von Marbod that Mr. Carlucci had the closest ties. Von Marbod was the Pentagon's chief arms sales official until he resigned under investigation in the Egyptian arms scandal. And that involved Alexander Haig and George Bush and the murder of Anwar Sadat when Mr. Mubarak came in. He doesn't put this in here, but this is where that time slot fits. Although it was determined that the transactions Mr. Von Marbod had approved of had led to massive abuses, it was decided there was too little information to charge him with criminal misconduct. That's the way Stanley Pottinger got off the Justice Department investigation of Hashemi with guns to Iran in 1982. The tape recordings of his voice were lost, and they said there's too little information. So Elliot Richardson and Stanley Pottinger of the Defense Department got off on their charges, and Hashemi was back in business doing what he did best, and Mr. Von Marbod and General Secord have been continuing. They don't even get a slap on the hand, and they're back in business with the NSC and the Defense Department. Mr. Carlucci left the Defense Department in 1982 when he became president of Sears Roebuck, the Sears Roebuck unit that is making weapons. It has to do with shipping weapons. They're now closing their doors. He brought Von Marbod along with a $200,000 a year job as a consultant. Richard Roderick Hills, former chairman of the SEC, said he was the original chairman of Sears World Trade, who left it in 1984, says Eric Von Marbod was at least chief of staff for Frank Carlucci. Eric read all his mail, answered all questions, went to all meetings. Susan Klo, Carlucci's assistant and a former personal secretary to President Carter, to the President of the United States, said Mr. Von Marbod was one of three people most influential in with Mr. Carlucci, the other being his wife and the other the former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. So we have a case where I read last week or the week before how Oliver North was over William Casey. Casey took orders from him. Well, in this case, Von Marbod, who's living in Paris now, was over Carlucci and those other people that have to fit in with Fred Eakley and Fritz Kramer and the secret team and give these public servants their marching orders. He now works for LTV Corporation in Europe. The relationship of Wilson, Secord, and Von Marbod and the former CIA officer Thomas Kleins, and that's one of the defendants in the Christic Institute case for gun running, narcotics traffic, and assassinations and assassination attempts down in Costa Rica, was reported by the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post in October 82. And I have all of those articles going back to 82. That's how I know who these characters are. The Wall Street Journal story concerned a 1979 Egyptian arms deal that resulted in a $10,000 criminal fine for a holding company headed by Mr. Kleins and the repayment of $3 million of an alleged $8 million illegal profit made by an Egyptian-American transport and services company called ITSCO. Now, Thomas Kleins was reprimanded by the CIA because of this money, this illegal profit. He gave back three of the eight, which means he still had five. And he wasn't allowed, according to the accounts, another large article, I believe in the Wall Street Journal this past week on Thomas Kleins. He wasn't allowed to be hired by the CIA because of these problems, of these overruns of millions of dollars. So when he couldn't be hired by the CIA, he was hired by William Casey to work for the National Security Council. When Mr. Secord can't work for the Pentagon because of the overcharges, then Secord works for the National Security Council, General Secord. So these people can't be fired. They're just changed to another agency. But then the pivotal question is, why does William Casey not blow the whistle on Kleins as he moves up into the White House? Why didn't they blow the whistle on Secord and Carlucci take him along with him for $200,000 a year at another job? And the answer is because they all work with a secret team and they can't be punished or removed. So the cost overruns and the so-called problems were ignored, and these people get hired again, even though their bosses know exactly what they did and probably why they did it. This article says Mr. Kleins played a role in the secret national security dealings with Iran. He also used funds borrowed from Mr. Wilson to establish Eatco. That was a Swiss company. It's written up, some of these details are written up by Peter Moss in Manhunt, referring to these four men and their work in a 1979 correspondence between Edwin Wilson and his lawyer and Mr. Klein's lawyer. Mr. Moss refers to this in the book. Wilson talked about this joint ownership. A January 18, 1979 memo from Wilson talks about individuals, four individuals, and U.S. citizens, and that has to do with Von Marbod, Klein's, and Secord, as long as with Edwin Wilson. Mr. Carlucci said he first met Mr. Von Marbod when he proposed for the Pentagon arms job. Carlucci was so impressed, he battled the Joint Chief of Staff to make the appointment. They wanted a military man for the job. So where does Von Marbod come from? Where does he come in? Just as Fritz Kramer was a private and then a lieutenant in the United States Army, and he becomes a plans officer over the whole Pentagon, I bring this out to illustrate the things I've been talking about for the last few weeks and the last few years. This is a long article from the Wall Street Journal, New NSC Chief and His Ties to the Past. Then Willie Cardo in Spotlight ran several articles on this same matter called White House Selects Security Chief. The old pro is their safe bet. And this goes into the work that Carlucci had in the Office of Management Budget, what he did in Portugal in 1975. In 1982, his working with Richard Perle and Stephen Bryan, and of course they fit closely in with Rafi Eitan and Michael Ledeen, and the Mossad connections. And the article goes on about Mr. Eric von Marbod, the former head of the Defense Security Agency, the Defense Security Assistance Agency, and retired Air Force General Secord, and their work with Carlucci, and how he's now brought them, these people, their past, he's brought into the National Security Council, and he's supposed to be cleaning it out. They also refer to Kenneth D. Graffenreid, who moved up to serve as Special Assistant to the President for Intelligence and Counterterrorism in the NSC, and his relationship to Middle Eastern diplomats, and also to de Marbod and the gang, Secord, and so forth. And then that's Hakim and Stanford Technology. The power behind these people, behind the appointments in the White House, was Helene von Dahm from TCI. Secord and Hakim working with the company that TCI formed, and they are now strongly linked to the man known as Frank Carlucci. Carlucci was instrumental, incidentally, working with Zbigniew Brzezinski, trying to stir up revolution in Poland, forming Solidarity, and he was active as a not only in helping a coup in the Congo and also in Brazil, but a political activist in every sense of the word. He also works close with Howard Teicher, who just left the NSC. He had the disinformation campaign, which would include the lies about the KAL, the Challenger, the Libya downing, the invasion of Grenada, and the Danilov arrest and meeting in the Soviet Union that formed the Reykjavik Conference. The article, December 29th from Spotlight, refers to Carlucci and not only his sales with Eric von Marbod, but with Theodore Shackley, his business connections. And, of course, Shackley, again, is one of the defendants in the Christic Institute case down involving murders and gun running and drugs in Costa Rica coming into the United States. And the whole team has a good friend in the NSC named Frank Carlucci. And, of course, Carlucci is holding on to their old friend, the highest of them all, Fritz Kramer. Another Spotlight article, a scandal, the story Mike Wallace won't print. And it's about CBS and Richard Secord, Frank Carlucci, and ex-CIA agent Edwin Wilson and Albert Hakim. And the interesting thing is that this past week I had maybe 40 articles on Hakim and Secord. And again, they come from Stanford Technology, Otto von Bolschwing's outfit, the attorney that formed the corporate papers before that TCI was Simon Rifkin, who's the attorney for Henry Kissinger. And these people have a lot of exposure now. A lot of articles are coming out, and we'll see how far it goes. The secret team that I mentioned last week on the air was visible on television again this past week. Oh, pardon me. I got the paper sitting in my... there's 1 hour program on NBC. That's Henry Kissinger's favorite station. He's an advisor to all of them. And it was a program on terrorism and what to expect in arms dealers and the Israelis' role. And the first person interviewed, of course, was Henry Kissinger, who was introduced as an expert on the National Security Council. giving his opinions of Washington. Then came Edward Luttwak from the Center of Strategic and International Studies, who wrote a book, Coup d'etat, just prior to the overthrow of this country. It came out in 1962, just before Dallas. Lawrence Eagleburger was another guest. He's a member of Kissinger Associates, talking about the White House and arms smuggling. They don't have much to say, and I typed up what they said, but it's the generalities. It's just that the team is always visible. This is the team that runs our country and doesn't get touched by the scandals. The fourth person interviewed on this team was Zbigniew Brzezinski, who worked very, very closely with Frank Carlucci and with the National Security Council, no matter who's in office. And then the last person on there of interest was Marvin Kalb, who has been the newspaper reporter, author, along with Kissinger Associates, his entire career, talking about terrorism and gun running. So the whole Kissinger, Brzezinski, Kramer team, Eagleburger, Luttwak, and all of them are on the media over and over again. I think I read that they had 500 hours accumulated on television since the Irangate story came, a little bit overdone, I would believe. No, it was since the Berlin Disco. The article I'm citing is by Carl Bloys from the People's Daily World. The right-wing think tank may have planned the Iran deal. And this is about this is before Mr. Abshir was put on to guard the White House and advise the president. And he came right out of the Georgetown think tank. I've mentioned that. So we have Carlucci with the National Security Council and Mr. Walsh representing the special prosecution, the special prosecutor. And then, of course, right behind them as the appointment right out of Georgetown Center of the very gentleman who's in charge of it, David Abshir, who will correlate the information that comes to the president as it comes. The article that I'm citing that came out in November said between the West Berlin disco bombing and the Chernobyl nuclear explosion, the Center for Strategic and International Studies fellows figured in over 600 radio and television broadcasts, articles, and opinion columns. Whether because of editorial laziness, ignorance, or political affinity, CSIS propagandists and international operatives appear regularly on everything from cable news network to national public radio, and of course ABC, NBC, CNN, CBS. Ledeen is practically a regular columnist for the Los Angeles Times, as is Jean Kirkpatrick, as is Henry Kissinger. And I think more and more as the people begin to spin off who are expendable in this case, you'll find that these people from that center continue to dominate the news media. And it's interesting, in this article about the right-wing think tank, it talks about Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and the Jean Kirkpatrick, how the money comes from Justin Dart and the Scaife Foundation, the Mellon family, and published accounts of activities that link McFarlane to Michael Ledeen. McFarlane comes from that center. He's there now. Michael Ledeen is there. And they can travel to Israel with David Kimchi, or they can go to Iran and meet Mr. Manikar Gurbanifar. But these people have a clique of their own that come out of there. And it's interesting that somebody has noticed that there were 600 radio and television shows by them alone. They seem to dominate the news. The same Carl Bloys wrote an article, Reagan appoints a fox to guard the chickens. The appointment of the founder or the past director of Georgetown Center for Strategic International Studies is a point man in the Irangate scandal, and he is to wipe out, displeasing things to the president's ear because the president is still euphoric, but he's been assigned to be in charge of the coordination of material as it comes into the White House. I might have mentioned this before. He's a former U.S. representative to NATO. He was brought into the Nixon team when it was besieged, and he defended the president against charges connected with the illegal, brutal bombing of Kampuche. On July the 30th, 1973, the House Judiciary Committee voted positively on the third of three articles of impeachment, two additional acts, one of tax fraud and the other of illegally concealing the bombing of Kampuche, were rejected by a vote of 26-12. So they refused to put this in the impeachment proceedings against Richard Nixon. They claimed this was a foreign matter, that this man took care of things overseas and not domestically, and they took away the bombing, and that involved, of course, Henry Kissinger's bombing. This article says Abshir was brought in to defend secret warfare. He has also Reaganite credentials. He was one of 11 U.S. ambassadors who publicly reprimanded Secretary of State Shultz for their unprecedented joint endorsement of the 1986 re-election bid of ultra-rightist Senator Jesse Helms. He was one of the 11 who was reprimanded by Schultz. They're not supposed to go out for a particular candidate. The Georgetown Center is well known for the likes of Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jean Kirkpatrick, Robert McFarlane, and Michael Ledeen, and Abshur is perfect for the job because he will be there taking in information about what these particular people do. And again, they're on the news all of the time. And one of the most scary articles to come out this past week, following the material I had on Fritz Kramer and Fred Eakley in the chain of command the last few weeks, it's titled Applying Military Brain to Military Brawn Again. This is the New York Times, December 17th. The main title is Pentagon by John Cushman. And it says that every few years, the military establishment takes its intellectual energy and plans a new national security strategy. In 1950, a plan was designated NSC 68. It was produced by Paul Nitschke of Arms Control about the growing Soviet Union. It allowed us to get into the Korean War. And, of course, the Korean War was excused to bring people like the Waffen-SS, Otto von Bolschwing, to the United States. The Nazis poured into this country after 1950 under the excuse of the North Koreans going down into South Korea. We had a worse invasion here than they had in South Korea. This article said, on Monday, a group of military experts got together to send a set of plans to Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger and the new head of the NSC, Frank Carlucci. And it says, officials associated with this panel say it will advise Carlucci, through him, the White House, on matters ranging from the support of insurgencies, those are our covert actions, to overthrow countries, against other governments, and to nuclear war strategies incorporating anti-missile defenses and the Star Wars. The panel, officially called the Commission on Integrated Long-Term Strategy, was formed without public notice this several months ago, headed by Dr. Fred Eakley, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, the Pentagon's third-ranking civilian, and by Dr. Albert Wolfstetter, an advisor to Dr. Eakley, former government national security official. Now, this was a few months ago that the panel got together, and Dr. Fred Eakley is the gentleman that Mr. Singlaub, General Singlaub, and General Secord went to illegally have counterinsurgency using the CIA and the Defense Department to overthrow the government of Nicaragua and also to overthrow Khomeini, send arms to Iran and get that revolution going also, or else to pay Khomeini for holding the hostages till Reagan had gotten elected. This is a long-time payment, I believe, that was promised to Khomeini. The group's task, according to Dr. Eakley, the same Eakley that worked with and shares offices with Fritz Kramer, I had that on the air, and a listener to World Watcher sent me that article about a 1981 statement of the relationship of Eakley and Kramer, which is still very thick, because Kramer's right there in the NSC with Carlucci, who works with Secord and Hakim from Stanford Technology, the Reinhard Galen Group, that would work with Fritz Kramer, of course. But here are the people that will be working with the panel, and they will decide the foreign policies, it says, for the next 15 to 20 years. The experts on the panel are Dr. Fred Eakley, this is the partner of Fritz Kramer, Zbigniew Brzezinski, that's the partner of Carlucci, in kicking up solidarity and trying to get a revolution going in Poland. W. Graham Claytor Jr., I'll have to go to the library and look that up in Who's Who or some books there. I don't know that name. Then there's William Clark. Now, when did William Clark become a great strategist? He was the NSC chief. He was in Army Intelligence when he brought Helene von Dohm to this country from Czechoslovakia and Germany when she became the appointment secretary for the governor in California and then the president, the same man being Ronald Reagan. William Clark will be with this committee, and Henry Kissinger, of course. So we have everybody but Alexander Haig on this tableau, and then Anne Armstrong is there with this group. She heads Mr. Reagan's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, which has Henry Kissinger and others among that board. Officials say the strategy being sought will respond to a wide variety of threats as possible. They will endorse the Star Wars and so forth. So in continuity with the secret team, here they are again, planning their strategies for, according to the New York Times, 15 or 20 years. Eakley, Brzezinski, Clark, Kissinger, and we don't know Graham Claytor. I'll have to look that up for you. Another article, part of an article that was interesting this week, was a chronology of the Iran Israeli connections, and it begins in 1978, December the 3rd, with Brzezinski, the same advisor that is going to be working on plans for the next 20 years, who tried to destabilize Poland and have a revolution there, and worked with Michael Ledeen and Paul Henson, Claire Sterling, in creating the fabric that there was a KGB plot to shoot the Pope. The chronology begins December 13th with Brzezinski working with the National Security Iranian Task Force, meeting Ibrahim Yadsi in Washington, D.C., making arrangements to topple the Shah of Iran. That was December 13, 1978. The next date they have is 1979, secret clauses of the Camp David Accord signed by Jimmy Carter, Egypt's Anwar Sadat, and Menachem Begin. This is the time when Mr. Secord and Van Marbod and Thomas Kleins were setting up offices in Switzerland, where the money that would come as a result of weapons and weapons deals at the Camp David Accord would be diverted to the PLO and to Iran. The next day, January the 3rd, and 4th, 1979, is a big new Brzezinski and NATO commander, Alexander Haig, who soon to become the Secretary of State in 1981 under Reagan. He was commander of NATO. He met with Air Force General Robert Huser in Iran with orders to prevent the Shah's Imperial Armed Forces from suppressing the fundamentalist uprising. February the 1st, 1979, Khomeini flies to Tehran from Paris and establishes his dual government, along with Prime Minister Yahtzee as Foreign Minister and Menuhin Bazargan as the Prime Minister, rather, than Yahtzee as Foreign Minister. And this chronology goes into November 4th and 5th, 1979, the Americans taken hostage. December the 12th, 1979, Carter orders expulsion of the Iranian diplomats. December 19th, 1979, a military attaché interested in Iranian projects in Washington was discovered working in our Office of Navy Intelligence, the top Iranian, working with the big new Brzezinski and Navy Intelligence. In the summer of 1980, they were working with Senator Robert McFarlane, a staffer of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and they were meeting with Reagan campaign official Richard Allen. He helped form the Georgetown Center with Mr. Abshir, and they were making a deal whereby the hostages would not be released to Jimmy Carter before the 1980 election. The chronology goes on. July 22, 1980, the head of the anti-Khomeini Iran Freedom Foundation, Ali Tabatabai, was assassinated by an American recruited by the Iranian government. This is where the Bernard Fensterwald case comes in the murder of Tabatabai in Washington, D.C., and how the Justice Department, Mr. Trott, and the people investigating the Iranian story, or should be, were involved in protecting the people who murdered an anti-Khomeini person in the United States, protecting those people that were pro-Khomeini. August 1980, Nahadian, working under Cyrus Hashemi, headed the first Gulf Bank and Trust Company in New York, and that money came from Switzerland, as I say, from Merrill Lynch, from Don Reagan, the secretary, chief of staff right now for the president, rather. August, September 1980, Brzezinski orders 130 airlifts of arms and spare parts to Iran, as part of a secret NATO supply base was used. August 26, 1980, an attorney for Cyrus Hashemi threatens a lawsuit unless his links to as being head of the Savama tied to Khomeini and terrorism should discontinue. And Hashemi, ironically, was killed in July of this year, and he was threatening suits if people linked him to anti-Khomeini murders in the United States, and then he himself was murdered. September 25, 1980, General Mordechai Hod, former chief of the Israeli Air Force, calls for Ma'ariv, an Israeli initiative, to start arming Iran. And September 27, 1980, Israeli Deputy Defense Mordechai Zipori says Israel is prepared to give Iran logistical support. They continued to do it. December 1980, Morris Amitai, head of the Israeli lobbying group, to sound out incoming Reagan administration on continuing the Israeli arms sales to Iran, which they did. And then in 1985, Ronald Reagan, with his full approval, took over the continuation of sales. In 1980, when Alexander Haig was Secretary of State, there were negotiations called a Memorandum of Understanding on U.S.-Israeli strategic cooperation. It suspended when Israel annexed the Golan Heights. Michael Ledeen was an aide to Secretary of State Haig and played a key role in a series of Haig-Sharon meetings before the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. In 1982, he also played a key role in Grenada with Mr. Robert Brown from Soldier of Fortune, Mr. Singlau's magazine. These meetings finalized a massive increase in U.S. intelligence flow to Israel, and the agreements were known as the Meridor Protocols. This is Michael Ledeen in Israel and Mr. Sharon, and they went into arms smuggling and arming Iran from these early dates. Time is running out. I will continue and update this until the final date on this is March 8, 1982, when the United States, New York Times rather, reports 1 to 2 million in parts and weapons were sent to Iran. And, of course, there were arrests for that. And Mr. Cyrus Hoshemi, Israeli General Avram Baram, and 17 others were charged with $2.5 billion. My time is out, and I have like 100 times more what I could put on in 1 hour, but we have to settle for what we have here. This is Mae Brussel. I'll continue with some of these horrendous scandals about the in players, the out players, who's going out and who's staying tight. This is the Iran scandal. The president is out, according to Robert Novak. The presidency is dead. So now watch the feathers fly. As I said, this is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week.